Welcome to this episode of Sisters Sidebar with Joyce Vance and me, Barb McQuaid. If you have a question for us, please email us at sistersinlaw@politicon.com or tag us on social media using hashtag sistersinlaw. But don't just type them. Your voices are so important, which is why we want to hear them too. So you can email us a voice memo using one of your notes apps, and we might play it on the show. Let's get started. Joyce, here's a question for you from Harry.
This is Harry from Northern Virginia. As a physician, there are consequences for me if I make a medical mistake, a malpractice suit, or if I do something unethical or knowingly do something wrong, the state board can investigate me. For federal prosecutors, what are the consequences if they make a mistake or, more importantly, if they do something unethical or knowingly wrong? Thanks, sisters.
Well, Harry, this is a really great question because, like doctors, lawyers are subject to certain standards, professional standards. And for federal prosecutors, there are more standards than there are for most lawyers because we're subject to internal discipline at the Justice Department. Of course, that's not functioning too well under this Justice Department. You know, I'm sure it functions just fine for run-of-the-mill prosecutors, but for the people that we're most concerned about, these high-ranking officials that are following Donald Trump instead of the rule of law, really internal discipline has become non-existent. And that means it's all up to state bars. And state bars do have the ability to discipline prosecutors. We're all licensed by one or more states. And so we are accountable to each of those states for their rules of professional ethics. Typically, state bars have been slow to act, but they have done it. You'll remember the disbarment of Rudy Giuliani. And that's a cautionary tale for every federal prosecutor who is willing to do Donald Trump's bidding instead of to uphold their professional oaths. Barb, next question is for you from Brian, and he asks, this is a great question. Does Patagonia have a trademark infringement case against drag performer Patagonia? Brian says, I don't see how people could get them confused. I mean, how do people get Barb McQuaid and Joyce Vance confused?
Yeah, I'm going to sue you for trademark infringement. There you go. This is a very good question. And in fact, Brian, I think that Patagonia has a very uphill battle here. Many corporate entities are very protective of their logos and of their brands because they don't want them to be used in a way that could tarnish their brand. But to make out a trademark infringement claim, you must establish that you own a valid and protectable trademark. And sometimes when you use something generic, like Patagonia is the name of a region in Argentina or Chile, it is, you know, maybe not something that they have unique dibs on. But so first, you have to establish that you own a valid protectable mark. But here's the other part, which you suggest, that the defendant's unauthorized use of a similar mark is likely to cause consumer confusion regarding the source or sponsorship of the goods. And I think Patagonia here has a very good argument that no consumer is going to think you're going to confuse me with the outdoors clothing brand. So I think it's a pretty uphill battle. It's a great question. Very insightful. This episode of Hashtag Sisters-in-Law is brought to you by Wildgrain. If you haven't heard, Wildgrain is the first bake-from-frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, artisanal pastries, and fresh pastas. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less with no thawing required. I really like that. Unlike many store-bought options, Wildgrain uses simple ingredients you can pronounce and a slow fermentation process that can be easier on your belly and richer in nutrients and antioxidants.
Well, thanks, Barb. Now I am hungry as we're sitting here getting ready to tape the show. Look, y'all, we love that Wildgrain's boxes are fully customizable. And in addition to their variety box, they have a gluten-free box, a vegan box, and even a new protein box. So no matter what you choose, it's amazing how fast Wildgrain goes from the box to our table. Like Barb says, you don't have to worry about defrosting. It's quick, it smells great, it's always a treat. My family and I enjoy the breads, we love the pastas, the pastries are great, and so do our guests, and they're always surprised and impressed when I tell them it's baked from frozen, it's not homemade. I have so many friends and neighbors, Mary, I'm thinking about you, who end up subscribing because it's perfect for delicious meals, snacks, or quick food prep.
Having Wild Grain delivered is so convenient when life gets busy. And I love watching the color and flavor come alive when the blueberry biscuits are heating up. They go so well with the slow churn French truffle butter. Have you had that, Joyce? I could just like...
It's so good. Whole. I'm like such... I love that so much. We keep it always in the fridge now.
Yeah, I know. We do too. It's really good. But after a long day, the chocolate lava cakes are the perfect treat. Mm. The aroma coming from the oven is incredible and the whole house has a warmer vibe. Just make sure you get enough to share, because when you want to treat your loved ones, Wild Grain is the perfect go-to.
Imagine having fresh bakery quality bread, pastries, and pasta at home, and you don't have to go to the store to get it. And don't just take our word for it. Wild Grain has over 40,000 five-star reviews, and they've been voted the best food subscription box by USA Today for 3 years in a row. Barb and I both know why. For a limited time, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off your first box, plus free croissants for life when you go to wildgrain.com/sisters to start your subscription today. I do not speak French like Kimberly Atkins-Storin. I cannot say croissant the way that she does, but they're just as delicious when I'm telling you about it as when she is. So go and get $30 off your first box and free croissant for life when you visit wildgrain.com/sisters. Or you can use promo code SISTERS at checkout. The link is in our show notes.
All right, Joyce, here's one for you from Jackie. After Todd Blanche leaves the Trump administration, can he be disbarred for unethical conduct?
Well, Jackie, this is a great question. Blanche is from New York, so I'm going to assume for purposes of answering your question that that's where he's barred and that's where a complaint might be lodged against him. But other states have very similar rules. Misconduct is governed by the New York rules of professional conduct, and unethical conduct, which can result in penalties that range up to and including permanent disbarment, it's officially classified under Rule 8.4, which covers misconduct. There are a couple of species of that that really pop out. One is deceit, fraud, and dishonesty. And lawyers are explicitly prohibited from engaging in illegal conduct, dishonesty, fraud, misrepresentation. That extends to both legal practice and personal dealings. So I'm not going to make a judgment about Todd Blanche's conduct, but that might be one avenue people who object to the way he's conducted the Justice Department's business might raise a bar complaint and ask the state bar to investigate. You know, there's also the conflicts of interest rule, which says that a lawyer cannot represent a client if the representation involves differing interests without obtaining informed written consent from all affected parties. And of course, the Attorney General of the United States represents the people, represents all of us. So there are some very interesting, I think, issues here. And Blanche could certainly see state bar charges brought against him, really not just after he leaves. Even now, those could be brought. Barb, there's a question for you from DJ.
Hello, sisters. This is DJ from San Diego, California. I just watched Keyshawn Pearson get arrested for the peaceful protest of refusing to leave his seat at the racial gerrymandering session of the Tennessee State Legislature. What happens to people arrested for peaceful protest? Are their lives ruined with going to jail, big legal fees, losing their jobs, having records that follow them in malicious ways? I want to stand up for democracy in that way, but what am I actually risking? What is the legal scenario after those police van doors close?
DJ, that's such a great question. And, you know, the answer is yes. Oftentimes there are criminal consequences when people protest. No, peaceful protest. That is, you're in a public place, a place you're allowed to be at a time you're allowed to be there, right? Time, place, and manner. And you're protesting is lawful, and you can't be arrested just for standing in a public area and protesting, you know, holding a sign, chanting, or what have you. I think sometimes people don't understand, however, that if they are in a place they're not allowed to be, if they are trespassing, you know, sometimes on university campuses, they'll take over the administration's offices or engage in property damage and other kinds of things. there are consequences for that. Even Martin Luther King was arrested many times. Rosa Parks was arrested. Sometimes that's the consequence and the outrage that comes from that consequence that actually is the change agent. I mean, after all, it's called Letter from a Birmingham Jail, not Letter from a Birmingham Beach. There were consequences.
Honey, we don't have beaches in Birmingham.
So, time, place, and manner is always something you have to watch out for, even when you're engaged in peaceful protests. Now that summer's here, we're all more active and spending more time outdoors, which means we need our outfits to meet the demands of the moment. But every year, it seems like it's harder to find shapewear and foundational garments that don't chafe, stab, or suffocate you. Comfort, style, and support are a must, and the last thing you want to do is keep readjusting your fit when you have things to do and places to go. Luckily, we found options that work with our body and fit perfectly in all the right places, from our favorite independent female-founded brand called Honeylove. Their founder, Betsy, leads a team of women who bring their talent and experience to design every product with your body and needs in mind. And the results are incredible.
With other brands, it seems like there's always something poking you or that needs adjusting. If we didn't know better, we would think that the only way to get shape and support is with sharpened wires and couch-sized padding. You don't have to put up with that. You can look fashionable and get form and function without all of that. And right now, we can't get enough of Honeylove's Cloud Embrace. It's soft, breathable, and incredibly comfortable, but still supportive enough to replace your old underwires. It feels great to wear, so from the moment you put it on until when you take it off, you just don't have to think about it all day. Even if you're a longtime Honeylove fan like us, they're always releasing exciting new pieces and new colors, too, that you'll want to add to your collection. Recently, they launched the new Crossover Contour Bra, which features their best-selling wireless crossover design with a beautiful contoured shape and built-in molded light foam pads for when you start to need extra structure or support. It's not about changing your body. It's about supporting it in a way that matches the occasion and actually feels good. And Honeylove delivers at every stage.
Honeylove has so many other things to offer. They've built a full line of tanks, bodysuits, shapewear, and foundational items featuring supportive structure, smoothing fabrics, and premium finishes made for any occasion. Comfort isn't a luxury. It's a requirement. You need to check them out. Treat yourself to the most advanced shapewear on the market. Use our exclusive link to save 20% off Honeylove at honeylove.com/sisters. That's honeylove.com/sisters. After you check out, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the new standard in comfort and support with Honeylove. The link is in the show notes.
Barb, there's a question for you from JT. JT says, is it required for the Attorney General to be a lawyer? What happens if people get appointed or elected to a legal position without relevant experience? So two different but related questions for you.
Yeah, so first, with respect to the qualifications required for the Attorney General, by statute, the Attorney General is required to be, quote, learned in the law. So they don't necessarily have to be a lawyer, but I suppose to be learned in the law these days, I think most would interpret to mean being a lawyer. But I suppose you could be someone who has studied law and has not passed the bar or something and still be considered learned in the law. And the broader question is, what happens if people get appointed or elected to a legal position without relevant experience? Other positions at the Department of Justice don't necessarily have these kinds of requirements. People could get appointed without them. I think one of the things Congress really can and should do is look again at all of the positions that require congressional approval, Senate confirmation, and include some more rigor. So we know, for example, that the Director of National Intelligence, for example, is supposed to have extensive expertise in intelligence. And, yet we're seeing Bill Pulte appointed to be the the acting director of national intelligence. But I think we could do similar things like the director of health and human services. Why not make that person a doctor or at least somebody with a public health degree in instead of an RFK Jr., someone who is a self-proclaimed victim of a brain worm. I think this would be a great reform. There's something like 4,400 appointed positions that require Senate confirmation. And I think that rather than let the president just decide who this person is, they still get their choice, but you could put some qualifications in to make sure that these aren't just political hacks. These are people who actually have some expertise in their field. All right, Joyce, here's one for you. This is from Kyle, who asks, what is your favorite legal fiction book?
You know, this is such a great question. If the question was, what's your favorite movie? I would be hands down Legally Blonde, charming, kitschy, lots of fun. With books, it's more difficult for me because there are so many good choices. But since I'm an Alabama girl, I have to go with To Kill a Mockingbird. It's a beautifully written story. It's not necessarily a fun book, but it's an important book, and it has a lot of resonance today when race is rearing its ugly head again in our politics. So if you haven't read it, or if you haven't read it recently, that's a great one to check out. Thank you for listening to Sisters Sidebar with Barb McQuaid and me, Joyce Vance. We love it when you send in your questions, when you record them for us in a voice memo form so we can actually hear your voice and answer your questions. Keep sending them in. They've been great so far. We'll try to play as many of your questions as we can in next week's episode. Follow Sisters Sidebar and also follow hashtag sisters-in-law wherever you listen. And please give us a 5-star review. It really helps others find the show. And please show some love to this week's sponsors, Wild Grain and Honey Love. Their links are in the show notes. Please support them because they're the ones who make this podcast possible and allow us to offer it at no cost to you. Don't forget to pick up your hashtag sisters-in-law merch and other goodies at politicon.com/merch. We'll see you every week on Wednesdays and Saturdays for new episodes of hashtag sisters-in-law and Sisters Sidebar.